Well, that song ought to get us into the Christmas spirit. I tell you what, it's been nice. A lot of people have said before Thanksgiving, you know, not to set out and get your decorations out for Christmas and wait till Thanksgiving's over and all of that. And I kind of understand that. I mean, let's focus on one thing at a time. And, of course, being thankful is a great thing. And now let's think about Christmas. That's where we are right now. And so I toyed around with this idea because of our fellowship. Christmas has not been a high point in our history as churches of Christ because of the way we've approached things. And some of you may have, I know I have grown up with maybe sermons, but perhaps at least teachings and comments about, well, Christmas is not the birth of Christ, and so we should not do that. It's okay to do Santa Claus and those sorts of things, but let's stay away from the birth of Christ kind of an issue. And so I thought, well, what if we just thought about and talked about the question that you see there, is Christmas about Christ? And that's where we're going to go today, and we're going to look at some of the things. And so, well, I mean, first of all, I'd say Christ is in the Word. I mean, Christmas. You have Christ in the Word. And so even with however we feel about it, with Christmas, Christ is in the Word. And so Christ, Christmas is, at least to that extent, about Christ. We know what Christmas means. Most of us do. The word means coming to us from the Catholic Church in the idea of the Mass, just another word for their worship service, but they would have a special worship service regarding the birth of Christ on Christmas Eve, I believe, at around midnight, so Christmas Day, Christmas Eve. And so it was called the Christ Mass. And so, of course, Christmas came out of that. But it was the Catholic Church recognition or honoring of Christ and the birth of Christ. Historically, before the Catholic Church formed and the early church was there, there was no real specific day or date about celebrating or thinking about the birth of Christ until about 225 A.D., which I thought, well, that's interesting. You look at your apostles have passed on, and so have most of your church fathers. The church fathers were people who exist or lived during the time that the apostles also lived. They may have been young men, and as the apostles passed away, they were that last generation that personally knew of the apostles. So the church fathers would be during that period, and so there was no special day to recognize or think about the birth of Christ. I ran across a sermon this week, just kind of Googled some things and found a little sermon called Christmas is About Christ. Now, I had already decided on the title, you know, is Christmas about Christ? And so I thought, wow, here's the answer. You know, Christmas is about Christ, was his sermon. And a really good message. And it turns out he deals with the birth of Christ from the standpoint that it's not just about giving gifts, it is about Christ, and that it opens the door, is what he said, for biblical discussions about Jesus. And I thought, hey, that's a good thing to think about, that Christmas is a perfect time. It opens the door for our discussion to other people about Jesus Christ. And for no other reason, it is a good thing for us to think about Christmas as the birth of Christ, or at least be aware that people are thinking about this. So next week, we'll change the title. We're going to keep the same picture, but we're going to change the title. This title is Christmas About Christ? Next week, it will be, What does Christmas say to the world? So I want you to come next week and listen to that. Get up in the morning. You know, you may have gotten Well, it's Christmas Eve. You may have some things that you would normally do, but knock that off for just a little while and come on to church, and we'll talk about what Christmas says to the world. And I think it's a good thing to think about. And I've already got that one worked up. I mean, it's an awesome bunch of scriptures we'll look at. Not that what I did it was awesome, but there's some great awesome things for you to see. But I want you to consider some things as we go along here, and we'll get to our passage in a little while. And first, just some thoughts from here and there. And so I decided, well, why not just, you know, look it up? And the Encyclopedia Britannica was a pretty good little source. And so I put this in my notes, and I think it's good to share. You might at least think it, jot it down if you want. They say, that article says that it is a Christian festival. In other words, Christmas is a Christian festival celebrating the birth of Christ, but also a secular family holiday. And I thought, I love that, because it weds the idea of old little town of Bethlehem with Santa Claus is coming tonight. You know, you've got the family kinds of things, knock secular out of it if you see that as a negative, but just non-religious, it's just a family holiday. So it's a Christian festival, and at the same time, it's a family holiday. It's something where people think about Santa Claus and think about the Christmas tree and think about hot chocolate and the fireplace and all those wonderful things that go along with it, and Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer and all of those cool things that we all grew up with and we enjoy, and it is a great time of year. But I do want to say that first century Christians had really, and we've already said this, but just to remind, they had no celebration. They had no special celebration of the birth of Christ. But pretty early on, and this is something to take note of, pretty early on, the early church celebrated the resurrection of Jesus Christ, what we now know as Easter. Any idea why? Why would it be that the early church would be able to settle on a time, a date specifically, to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ? Well, it's because Jesus Christ was crucified on Passover, before Passover, the Friday, and then, of course, was in the tomb over the Passover, and he was raised on the first day of the week, which is the first day of the week after Passover. And so it was really easy to identify exactly when Jesus Christ rose from the dead. And so when we get together as a church and we talk about Easter, we've got pretty good legs to stand on. The early church said, you know, it's right there, and we know exactly what Sunday it was. And so that is so critical, too, that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. I mean, that's what our salvation is all about, that Jesus came from the dead, and God proved that he was his son by raising him from the dead, according to Romans chapter 1. And so it was celebrated and was again tied to the Passover, which is the 14th day of Adar. And they're able, that's a Hebrew day a month, they're able to determine right when it was. And that's a cool thing for it. But Christmas, you know, the birth of Christ, nobody knows. The Bible doesn't go into any detail at all. And some people say, well, because the shepherds were out there at night tending to their flock, it was most likely in the springtime. Now, I don't know anything about shepherding or sheep, but, you know, somebody evidently does, and they thought, well, that must be what it was. But there's still no proof. We still don't know exactly what it is. In the 220s, this is why these two dates connect, about 225 again, one particular Christian scholar determined in his thinking and tried to prove it to everybody that December 25th was actually the date. So all the way back to about 225 A.D., somebody came up with that date. So that's where we have December 25th. And of course, people disagreed, but we have no details. But by the 9th century then, Christians began to celebrate Christmas in pretty good numbers as the birth of Christ. And so it became something that the church, the early church, began to practice and look at. And then someone made the comment, and this is good for us to know, and because sometimes people will point at things like, well, the Christmas tree is actually a pagan symbol, and it was used during the winter solstice, and it was a way of honoring, mother or father winter, or whatever other pagan kind of gods that they believed in. And so that was right around the same time. And so Christianity ought to steer away from all of that kind of stuff, because in a sense, it's accepting into its belief some things that have come from paganism. But that may not be the right way to look at it, because the early church at that time determined that, if you converted a pagan and you could provide them with an alternative to celebrating the winter solstice, which was a pagan ritual, you could even borrow their tree if you wanted to and make it something special having to do with the Christmas celebration, and that pagan would be weaned away from his paganism because you've provided an alternative. It's kind of like they used to teach us whenever we were younger, if you're having trouble, when I was a teenager anyway, I heard this, if you're having trouble breaking your habit of smoking cigarettes, what should you do? Well, one suggestion was, anytime you have that urge, take out a piece of gum and chew gum. So it was an alternative. It was a way of getting away from the cigarettes and the tobacco, and to do something that's not going to be harmful for you. And so that's what the early church would tell us today. The reason why it was brought into vogue was also to encourage, and the date around December 25th was settled on, was because it would help the pagans to be weaned away from their paganism, kind of like the gum to keep people from smoking. And I thought, that's not such a bad idea. And yet the Puritans, this is also something I found out, the Puritans actually banned the celebration of the observation of Christmas because it was a Catholic festival. And so the Puritans, as a Protestant group protesting the Catholic Church, determined that we can't do anything that we get from the Catholic Church. If we do, we're compromising pure Christianity. That's a pretty good argument. That's something for us to think about. And our fellowship kind of fell into that same idea. We don't want people to celebrate Christmas as the birth of Christ. And so Christmas is really not about Christ, because the Catholics are the ones that kind of introduced that, which is really actually not true, because it was prior to that the early church was already beginning to look at, the date around the 220s of the birth of Christ began to be thought about and practiced to some extent. And so the Catholics just kind of inherited that and enlarged on it. And so the Puritans, anyway, in our fellowship, would make the argument that Christmas is not about Christ. However, I would differ and say, if the church, the early church, makes the determination in our church, our fellowship, that why not? Is it okay? Well, some would argue that it's not authorized in Scripture, and so therefore it's not allowed. That you can't celebrate Christmas as the birth of Christ. Go with the Santa Claus stuff and the sleighs and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and toys and chimneys and those kinds of things, but stay away from anything about Jesus Christ. And so, of course, in some of our upbringing, that was really frowned upon to look upon Christmas as anything other than just a Santa Claus kind of a secular event. Remember, Britannica said it's a Christian festival, first of all, celebrating the birth of Christ, but also a secular family holiday. Not that that's an authority for us, but it's just realize that, you know, there are two parts of Christmas that we celebrate. Now, another thought is that modernists and anti-Christian organizations and groups continually work to remove Christ from Christmas. It's no longer Christmas to a lot of people that we celebrate during this time of year, but it's the holidays. We don't say Merry Christmas. Instead, we say Happy Holidays. Now, some of that could be a good intention. Well, let's, you know, be tolerant of folks, and tolerance isn't a bad thing. But I think a lot of it, and I do really honestly believe this, a lot of it is to just, let's get Christ out of there. Remember, next week we want to talk about what does Christmas say to the world? And so there's something profound and good that can come from seeing Christmas as the birth of Christ. We're celebrating Christ, that Christmas is about Christ, because of what it might say to people of the world. Well, the modernists would turn that around and say, no, what we need to do is get Christ out of Christmas, because that keeps Christ from coming to people's minds. And Christmas is a time when a lot of thoughts come up about Jesus Christ from people who never would have thought of it otherwise. Just out of the blue, suddenly, there's a certain time of the year where they're reminded. Easter works the same way. Easter is something that brings people to mind of Jesus, and they know that it's more than the bunny rabbit, it's more than the colored eggs and those kinds of things, that we actually have a special emphasis on the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Well, what would be wrong with also having an emphasis on the birth of Christ? Does the Bible not? I mean, do we not look at Matthew 2 and Luke 2 and elaborate on those kinds of things? The Magi and Herod and shepherds and the angels and all of those kinds of things that we see in the manger and, you know, just on and on we could go with all of that kind of stuff. How focused the Bible itself is on the birth of Jesus Christ. Of course, we ought to always think about that. It's like, of course, the resurrection around Easter. We could say, well, you know, resurrection is super important. You ought to think about that every day of the week and for all the whole year and not have a special time. Well, it's a good argument, but not so much. There's nothing wrong with holding it if it calls attention to Jesus Christ. That's my thought. That's my opinion. That's just an opinion. You can't find it in the Bible anywhere. But maybe you can to some extent. Did you know Hanukkah started between the Testaments? We're finishing the book of Malachi in our Sunday morning Bible class. And when Malachi ends, it ends with the promise of the coming of the Messiah. But there's a 400-year pause before the events of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John begin. Malachi ends, and then Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, 400 years separate. In the middle of all of that is the Jews, and there's the Greeks, but there's also the conquering of Israel by Antiochus Epiphanes. You don't need to know his name. But once he conquered the Jews during this between the Testaments period, he desecrated the temple, the altar in the temple. He offered a sow, a pig, on the altar. And so after the Maccabees defeated Antiochus Epiphanes and those that were part of that, they actually had to restore or rededicate the temple. And during the period of rededication, they established this celebration of Hanukkah. And Hanukkah is the one with the candles that have the eight candles, you know. Sometimes there's a ninth one in the middle that remains burning, but it's because the 8-day period, in their thinking, the olive oil and the lamp that was to stay lit during this period where they're rededicating the temple for 8 days remained burning even though they were running almost completely out of oil. So they looked at it as a miracle that the the flame continued for 8 days, and so that's why they light each day of Hanukkah another part of the candles of the candelabria. And so that's Hanukkah. But they determined to do it themselves. There were no prophets during this period. There was no word from God from this period, but they determined they were going to celebrate this rededication of the temple from that point on, and they still do. Hanukkah happens around the end of November, early December. You've probably, when it happens, happens right around this time. Just happened, actually. And so it was one of those celebrations. You think, God didn't authorize that. Listen to me now. Well, God didn't authorize that. They just determined themselves that they were going to do it. Well, they should have done that because authorization is so very important. That's part of our argument from our backgrounds. And authority is important, but to perhaps extend it beyond where it should be extended is a good point to remember. At any rate, it's interesting to know that in John chapter 10, Jesus actually attended the festival of dedication. Well, what's the festival of dedication? It's Hanukkah. It is the festival to dedicate the temple, which is what Hanukkah is all about. And so Jesus actually endorsed the Hanukkah celebration that was determined without the voice of God. The people were allowed and did Hanukkah. And so Hanukkah was, of course, interpreted. But there's another one, and here's where I want you to get your Bibles out. In Esther, the book of Esther comes just before Job and the book of Psalms. And so it's kind of during that period when God's people were in captivity in Babylon and then Persia. And we talk about that. We have talked about that in our Bible class on Sunday morning when we've done Minor Prophets. But in the book of Esther, Esther is the queen, and King Xerxes, of course, is the king. And a guy by the name of Haman, who is a Persian, wants to have the preeminence. Mordecai gets in the way. Mordecai is actually the uncle of Esther. They're Jews. And Mordecai gets in the way, and so Haman decides that he wants to do away with him. This is found in chapter 3. You don't have to turn there. I'll just summarize it real quick. The king actually gives Haman some honor and gives him an opportunity to determine a particular act. And his determination is that we want to wipe out all the Jews. There's a certain people, he says, that are dispersed among the people of the province in your kingdom. They keep to themselves and they're separate. Their customs are different from those of all other people. They don't obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them. And I will give 10,000 talents of silver to the king's administer to the king's treasure. So the king decides to do that, and he uses his signet ring, which makes it really official, to go out and let's wipe out all the Jews. And so, of course, while that was taking place, and Mordecai discovered it, Mordecai comes before the king, and they look at some annals, and they discover that the Jews have actually done some very good things in the past, and the king begins to realize, something's not exactly right here. And so in chapter 6, Mordecai is honored for the good thing that he has done that they found in the annals of the king. And it turns out that Haman is found guilty by Esther speaking up, and he's put to death. And the decree to wipe out all the Jews is canceled, and the Jews are saved. And they can't believe it. And so Mordecai writes to these people in chapter 9. And this is what I want to read to you. He says, he writes letters. He sends them to all the Jews. And he says that they are to have to celebrate annually the 14th and the 15th days of the month of Adar as the time when the Jews got relief from their enemies, as the month when their sorrow was turned into joy and their mourning into a day of celebration. He wrote them to observe the days as days of feasting and joy and giving presents of food to one another and gifts to the poor. So the Jews agreed to continue the celebration they had begun. They had begun doing what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them and had cast the pur, P-U-R, that means the lot, because of everything written. By the way, the lot was cast that selected Haman to give him the opportunity to decide what the king should do next, and that's what the casting of lots back in chapter 3 was all about. Because of everything written in the letter and because of what they had seen and what happened to them, the Jews, underline this in your mind, took it on themselves to establish the custom that they and their descendants and all who joined them should without fail observe these 2 days every year in the way prescribed and at the time appointed. These days should be remembered and observed in every generation by every family and in every province and in every city. And these days of Purim should never fail to be celebrated by the Jews, nor should the memory of these days die out among their descendants. So Queen Esther, the daughter of Ahasuerus, along with Mordecai, the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm this second letter to concerning Purim. The Mordecai sent letters to all the Jews in the 127 provinces of Xerxes' kingdom, words of goodwill and assurance to establish these days of Purim at their designated times as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had decreed for them, and as they had established for themselves and their descendants in regard to their times of lasting fasting and lamentation. Esther's decree confirmed these regulations about Purim, and it was written down in the records. And so verse chapter 9 ends. Here's the thought. Maybe you've already gotten it, but here we have a group of people who established Hanukkah on their own, and Jesus, of course, then observed that feast of dedication when his time came. So Hanukkah had been observed from that point on, and still is. Purim is still observed today, and Purim is something that is actually spelled out here. They've determined it on their own that we would celebrate this. And it was accepted by God, obviously. It wasn't, God wasn't angry with them because they chose to do something and to honor a special day. So my argument is that Christmas can be about Christ, and that Christmas is about Christ, at least around the world. And many good things can Christmas say to people who are not aware of Christ and help to make them aware of Christ. And so instead of being combative about the idea of Christmas as the birth of Christ, all of us know, we really don't know when he was born, but set aside once a year a certain time to especially celebrate is something I believe the church can decide and the church can do. And there's nothing that God is going to say, oh, you can't do this. I didn't tell you you could do this. I didn't give you authority to do this. We find in the Bible that here God's people earlier were able to establish something, and then it was honored by God in the sense that it was continued, and even Jesus participated in one part of it. I hope that makes sense to you, because some of us, there's a little bit of a heebie-jeebies about, well, do we really call that the birth of Christ? We know it's not legally, officially the birth of Christ, date-wise, but it is a celebration about. And however you fall on that, I think it's up to you. And that if you decide that I want to celebrate it as the birth of Christ, like everybody else does, there's nothing at all wrong with that. And God is not going to be disappointed in you or angry at you, just as he wasn't disappointed, surely, of these Jewish people who established Purim entirely on their own as a way to honor God for saving their lives. All these things happened providentially so that the Jews were saved And so they decided, let's honor God, let's celebrate that, let's just do a celebration every year about all of this. And of course, they're still doing it. And I think we're doing the same thing when it comes to Easter and when it comes to Christmas. Those are good things for us to participate in. Again, in my thoughts, and I hope in yours, and if not, then we may just disagree a little bit, but that's all right. It doesn't mean we have to divide over that issue. But it has been an issue in our fellowship, is why I felt like we needed to deal with it today. So please come next week. Christmas says something to the world, and I want you to, if you will, be part of that. And to me, it was very uplifting to go through and read and study and think about that. And so I hope this helped you today, too. I'm going to sing an invitation song. If you have a need, we want to invite you to come. Let's all stand and sing this song. If you need anything, please come on up.